Thousand Oaks is hanging there, Doc. I wish you'd get back to the pyramids. I'm working. That's where I'm going. I'm working my way back. I mean, there are lots of you that didn't mean a thing when we told you that the pyramid was lined up with Draco and the Pleiades. Now I can put it in perspective. And when I said the pyramid measured and conveys a full understanding of the precession of the equinoxes and is obviously built only by someone with full knowledge of the stars in those ancient days. Evolution says we begin as savages and get smart. We began in the image of God and got dumb. That's a Christian premise. And I'm in the business of proving the Bible. I wonder what the evolution is going to do with this one. Or I wonder what the racists are going to do. To think all black savages got educated by the slavers. Here's a tribe in Africa that knew. Arthur pointed out, Arthur Young had a particular passion for reading about mythologies from all over the world. One day he showed me a book entitled African Worlds, which contains several chapters. I'm reading from the Sirius Mystery, or the Sirius Mystery, or the Sirius Mystery, the Sirius Mystery. I just drive these astronomers crazy. One day he showed me a book entitled African Worlds, which contains several chapters, each dealing with a different tribe, with its views of life and its customs and mythology. There was a chapter about the Dogon, translated into English from the French, of Marcel Grial and Germain Dieterlen, the eminent anthropologist. Now, in this book I happen to have the full translation of the French article about the Dogon. Let's keep going. Arthur pointed out to me a passage he had just read in this chapter in which these famous anthropologists were describing the cosmological theories of the Dogon. I shall quote the paragraph. Quote, the starting point of creation, this is in their cosmology, revealed by their priests, like the sacred mysteries of the priests of the pyramid in Egypt, or like the sacred mysteries of the Druids among the Celts in ancient Britain, only to a trusted person that had been with them for years, as we'll see. This is what this tribe in Africa had in its cosmology. The starting point of creation is the star, which Ra revolves around Sirius, and is actually named the Digitaria star. It is regarded by the Dogon as the smallest and heaviest of all the stars. Now, I'm going to get ahead of the story, but the problem with this is you can't see this star. And these people had no telescopes. And yet they regard, can you see these missionaries breaking out of the bush and the slavers breaking out of the bush finding these doggone people? And when you can get a priest to talk to you, he says, the starting point of creation is a star that revolves around the dog star that nobody can see. How do you know that? It is regarded by the Dogon as the smallest and heaviest of all the stars. It contains the germs of all things. Its movement on its own axes. Hey, the Pope is just about to admit that they may have been a little hard on poor old Galileo. This marvelous, wonderful Roman church in all of its brilliance in medieval Europe that's going to save Jerusalem from the heathen and colonize Africa, these doggone people not only are talking about the center of the creation being a star nobody can see, they have an awareness of it revolving on its own axes. How do you know that? It contains the germ of all things. Its movement on its own axes and around Sirius upholds all creation in space. Its orbit determines the calendar. That was all. That was all in that little article by Young. That's all. Just a tantalizing little dangler. There was no mention to the anthropologists of the actual existence of such a star. Now, Arthur Young and I both knew of the existence of the white dwarf star, Sirius B, which actually does orbit around Sirius, the dog star. How did they know that? They wouldn't break out of the jungle. There's no missionary there teaching them. Now, they read this in that little old book entitled African World by these two anthropologists, and they're baited. Yet they know there is such a star, Sirius B. Now, in the cosmology of the Dogon, they said it was the smallest and heaviest of all stars. Now, Arthur Young and I knew that Sirius B was, quote, the smallest and heaviest type of star then known. Neutron stars and black holes have not yet been discovered. So we both naturally agreed that this was a most curious illusion from a supposedly primitive tribe. How could it be explained? I had to let the matter drop due to other activities and concerns at that time, and approximately 2 years later in London, I suddenly was struck by the irresistible urge to investigate this question. I was prompted to do so by reading the rousing futuristic essays of Arthur C. Clarke, whom I had come to know by then. But this time I could not even remember the name of the African tribe, so I wrote to Arthur Young for it. He replied and kindly sent me a photostat of the entire chapter I had seen in African Worlds. So armed with the knowledge that it was a tribe called the Dogon that I was after, I bravely made my way to the Royal Anthropological Institute to see what I could find out about this peculiar tribe. The librarian went over the catalog listings with me, and I ran into a problem. Everything was in French, and I didn't know French. However, I persevered and found an article listed which included the word Sirius in its title. That looked promising. So I asked for a photostat, and when I picked this up a week or two later in November 1967, I was unable to make any sense of it, of course. So I eventually found someone to translate it for me in return for a fee. Finally, I was presented with the material in English. This article dealt exclusively with the most secret of all the traditions of the Dogon, which after years of living with them, the anthropologists Rial and Dieterlin had managed to extract from four of their head priests. After a special priestly conference among the tribe, and a policy decision to make their secrets known to Marcel Grial, the first outsider in their history to inspire their confidence. The most secret traditions of the Dogon all concern the star, which the Dogon call after the tiniest seed in grain known to them, the botanical name for which is Digitaria, but which is thus used in the article as the name of the star instead of the actual Dogon name, Pole. However, even in this article, which deals exclusively with this subject, the two anthropologists only mention the actual existence of a star which really exists and does what the Dogon say Digitaria does. They only mention it in a passing footnote in this brief remark, quote, "The question has not been solved, nor even asked, of how men with no instruments at their disposal could know the movements and certain characteristics of stars which are scarcely visible." Now, these are anthropologists asking the question. Even in saying this, the anthropologists were indicating their own lack of astronomical expertise, for the star, Sirius B, which revolves around Sirius the dog star, is by no means scarcely visible. It's totally invisible. And was only discovered in the last century with the use of a telescope. And yet centuries and four centuries, the Dagon tribe have worshipped and seen this invisible star as the source of creation. It's totally invisible. As Arthur Clarke put it to me in a letter of 17th of July, 1968, after he had suggested he would check the facts, quote, "By the way, Sirius B is about magnitude 8, quite invisible, even if Sirius A didn't completely obliterate it." Only in 1970 was a photograph of Sirius B successfully taken by Irving Lindenblad of the U.S. Naval Observatory. This photograph is reproduced in Plate 1. You want to see it? Take your bets. You gonna let me give them books or not? You gonna let me give them books or not? That's not it. Zoom back in. That's not it. That's Sirius. That's the dog star. It's one of these little dots down in here. Underneath it, down in here. I'll take you that far. This is how bright Sirius A is. One of these little dots here, Sirius B, unable to be seen. This was taken by the U.S. Naval Observatory. No way those doggone people could have seen it with the natural eye, and yet, in the article which I obtained from the Royal Anthropological Institute, I sure fooled you, didn't I? Rial and Dieterlin recorded that the Dogon, that's this primitive tribe in Africa, said the star Digitaria, they call it Po, which is a grain that we don't have in our country, which is the smallest of all seeds of grain. So they called it that in order to convey the smallness of the star. How'd they know that? The Dogon said the star Digitaria or Po revolved around Sirius, every 50 years. They got a star they can't see, and they know that it revolves around Sirius every 50 years. And they're right. How do they know that? I mean, they never had any brains of some dumb honky got down there. That's why I hate racists. You know, why didn't those people that did Roots go find somebody like this to show off? If my black brothers had talked to me a little more, I'd tell them how to tell them honkies where to go. Think of this! That tribe in black Africa seeing a star that can't be seen, and telling you how many years it takes to revolve around Sirius. How'd they know that? Smart, that's why. Very smart. It didn't take me long to research Sirius B and discover that its orbital period around Sirius was indeed exactly 50 years. I now knew I was really onto something. And from that moment, I've been immersed in trying to get to the bottom of the mystery. Arthur Clarke was extremely helpful during the next few months. I'm reading this so you'll know the guy that did this, not nuts. He wrote from Ceylon and was fairly often in London, so he and I have discussed at great length many of the mysterious facts from around the world which have since been given such public prominence by the Swiss-German author Erich von Däniken in his best-selling book, The Chariot of the Gods, and its sequels. Arthur Clarke introduced me to one interesting professor after another, each with a pet mystery all his own. And me, I have a whole flock of pets. Derek Price, Avalon Professor of History of Science at Yale University, had discovered the true nature of the now famous mechanical computer of approximately 100 B.C. found in the Antikythera shipwreck at the turn of the century. Would you like to know about that? And unappreciated until it was dropped on the floor in Athens, cracked open, and they saw what it was. He also found traces of Babylonian mathematics in New Guinea and talked a lot about the Raffles shipwreck. Then there was Dr. Alan McKay. This is my kind of guy. A crystallographer of Birkbeck College at the University of London who was interested in the Phaedos disk of Crete in a mysterious metal alloy found in a Chinese tomb and in the wilder stretches of the Oxus River. I found that with people like this around every corner, I was rapidly becoming distracted from my true quest by so many glittering riddles. Boy, wouldn't I drive this guy nuts. I therefore abandoned all those mysteries and determined to concentrate in depth on cracking the one really hard and concrete puzzle that I'd been initially confronted with. How in the doggone heck did the doggone know such extraordinary things, and did it mean that the earth had been visited the extraterrestrials? I put an extra doggone or two in there. But how did they know this? Now, the trouble with trying to undertake a serious... Am I boring you? Trouble with trying to undertake a serious investigation about the possibility of extraterrestrial contact with Earth is that a lot of sensible people will be put off by the very idea. Then again, a lot of people who will enthusiastically receive my researches with open arms are the sort of people one least wants to be classed with. I have therefore undertaken all the work on this subject with a certain degree of reluctance. And if anyone pressed me during several years to say what I was doing, and they extricated from me the confession that I was working on a book, I didn't say what it was about, but merely mumbled, "Oh my God." But merely mumbled it was about the ancient Egyptians, or before that stage, about the mythology of some tribe in Africa. Not very interesting, really. This book will inevitably... I'll tell you what I'm going to show by this book, The Brotherhood of Man. See, with all the racism going on, if you're a Christian, you got to remember, we all sprang from the same father and mother. Now, God has made some choices en route. And to anybody unhappy with his choices, he's given us the best choice, to become one with him and his son and receive the unmerited favor of the inheritance of grace. But the Bible keeps being proven. And I'll show you. This book will inevitably, I suppose, put me in that most unenviable category of those people who write about little green men from outer space. However, this is meant to be a serious inquiry. I'm tempted to apologize for the subject, but that would be pointless. Can it be that the Dogon came to realize something of the way in which people react to these things and keep it secret until the time came the truth would find a more ready receptivity? At least they came to realize something through some powerful instinct, and after mutual consultation among the highest priests, they decided to take the unprecedented step of making public their highest mysteries. They trusted the French anthropologists. And when Marseille Grial died in 1956, to show their trust of this anthropologist, approximately 250,000 tribesmen mass for his funeral in Mali, in tribute to a man whom they revered as a great sage, equivalent to one of their own high priests. Such reverence must indicate an extraordinary man in whom the Dogon could believe implicitly. There is no question but that we are indebted to Marcel Grial's personal qualities for laying open the sacred Dogon traditions. I have now been able to trace these back to ancient Egypt, and they seem to reveal a contact in the distant past between our planet Earth and an advanced race of intelligent beings from another planetary system several light years away in space. It shouldn't surprise us. There must be other civilizations in our galaxy, other life. If you look up at the sky, the brightest star you can see is Sirius. You want to keep going? Venus and Jupiter are often brighter, but they're not stars. They're planets going around their own sun, which is a star itself. Now, no astronomer will tell you there's any particular reason for intelligent life to be anywhere in the area of Sirius. The reason Sirius is so bright is that it is large and close, bigger than the sun, bigger than the handful of other nearby stars. An intelligent astronomer will tell you that perhaps the stars Tau Ceti or Epsilon Eridani, which are rather similar to our sun, have planets with intelligent life. That'd be a good guess. But among the stars most frequently discussed as possibly harboring intelligent life, Sirius is not included. Not an obvious choice. Now, Project Ozma took place in the spring of 1960. And in more recent years, other radio searches for intelligent life in space. Project Ozma sent out instrumentation and listened to these two stars, Tau Ceti and Epsilon Eridani, to see if any signals were coming from them on a certain wavelength at a certain time with a lot of energy behind them. Nothing happened. Later, such attempts have more realistically widened their scope somewhat, but the astronomers are fully aware that they're waltzing in the dark. Since Project Ozma, the giant radio telescope at Arecibo in Puerto Rico, which is, if not the largest now, was the largest in the world at this time, has listened selectively to several stars, but never listened to Sirius. It's just not the choice for life. Why are these doggone people focused in on it? Now, before we come to the evidence, I'd say a little more about Sirius. About the middle of last century, an astronomer was looking rather hard at Sirius over a period of time and got annoyed because it wouldn't sit still. It wobbled. He had a difficult time figuring this out. What made that star wobble? He finally concluded that an extremely, but unseen, heavy and massive star going around Sirius could make it wobble. He didn't see anything. The only trouble was there wasn't any large star going around Sirius. He couldn't see it. And when he finally looked and could see what was going around it, not with the natural eye, it wasn't a large star. It was a little bitty thing. A tiny little thing going around it every 50 years. So Sirius came to be called Sirius A, and the little bitty thing came to be called Sirius B. You bored? Now, Sirius B was at that time unique in the universe, as far as anyone knew. Over 100 of these things have now been seen scattered around the sky, and the many thousands more, which we can't see even though our modern telescopes look at them, or for them, because they're so tiny and their light's so feeble. They are called white dwarfs. Now, I'll tell you some details about it. A cubic foot of matter of Sirius B would weigh 2,000 tons. A matchbox full of matter from the star Sirius B would weigh a ton and a quarter. a matchbox full of its matter would weigh 2,500 pounds. Matchbox. How'd you like to pitch that over home plate? White dwarfs are strange because although they are feeble in light, they are very strong. They don't give out much light, but they are fantastically powerful gravitationally. Do you have any idea what a flying instrument with the power to break loose from that gravity could do in our atmosphere? Now, you saw those guys jump around on the moon where the gravitational power is a little different. Boy, they look like ballet dancers in all their funny suits that made Don Knotts almost have a heart attack. Remember Don Knotts in his spacesuit? Huh? Just think about that for a moment. A flying object, if there were intelligent beings on that white dwarf, don't anybody say I'm saying there are, just speculate with me for a minute. Just fun night. And what else can we do while we're being interrupted with calls from the PTL satellite? Any anti-gravitational device, which is what a flying object is, our orbiting spaceship is an anti-gravitational device. Kind of primitive. We're just barely able to get it out there and go around for 3 or 4 days. One capable of fighting gravity like this white dwarf that could spring free from it, do you have any idea what it could do in our gravitational field? They don't give out much light, but they're fantastically powerful gravitationally. On a white dwarf, we would not even be a fraction of an inch high. We would be flat, pulled in by gravity. You see, the big star that was necessary to make Sirius A wobble turned out to be a little thing, but it still had to be as massive and heavy as an ordinary star of much more enormous size. It is, in short, a star so dense and closely packed that it is not even made out of regular matter. It is made out of what is called degenerate matter or super dense matter, where the atoms are pressed together and the electrons squashed. This matter is so heavy that it cannot be thought of in any familiar terms. There is nothing in our solar system, to our knowledge, comparable to this stuff. But physicists have considered it theoretically, and in this century, we're making finally some progress toward understanding it. It is even claimed by some astronomers that the Sirius system has a Sirius C, or a third star. Fox claimed to see it in 1920, and in 1926, 28, and 29, it was supposedly seen by Van den Bosch, Finsen, and others at the Union Observatory. Then for several years, when it should have been seen, it was not. Zeger and Bollett, famous astronomers, said it was there because there were wobbles that pointed to it. So perhaps it is there, perhaps it isn't. Nobody's ever settled it for sure, except the Dogons say it is. Those doggone people say it's there. They've even drawn graphs. They have graphs. They drew pictures of it. Here, for example, here is the actual orbit of Sirius B. And in this elliptical orbit, you have two foci. Those who know anything about these circular foci, you have two foci in that kind of orbit. Here and here. Here is a drawing of the orbit of Cyrus. This is a drawing of these primitive Dogons. Here's Cyrus, exactly where it's shown here in the more scientific drawing. And here is the orbit of the invisible star that takes 50 years. These primitive savages that had to be rescued from the dark, primitive, evolutionary two steps beyond the tadpole and the monkey stage. Seeing a star that nobody can see before anybody knew it was there, telling you it's little and heavy and has a 50-year orbit that's elliptical like this and goes around Sirius and has its own axis. How do they know that? And they say there's another one. Sirius haven't found it yet. I like these people. They're smart. Very smart people. The most recent full study of the Sirius system by an astronomer has been carried out by Irving W. Oh, I didn't finish my footnote. A matchbox full of matter from the star would weigh a ton and a quarter. A matchbox full taken from the star's core would weigh approximately 50 tons. The star is 65,000 times denser than water, whereas our own sun has a density about equal to that of water. The most recent full study of Sirius system by an astronomer has been carried out by Irving W. Lindenblad of the U.S. Naval Observatory in Washington, D.C. He and I have corresponded, and he has sent me his publications. The latest appeared in 73, and also the photograph in Plate 1, which was taken to him in 1970 after several years' preparation, and is the first photograph ever taken of the star Sirius B, which in the photograph is a tiny spot of light near the main star Sirius A, which is 10,000 times brighter. I'll show it to you again. The first photograph ever taken of Sirius B, which is the tiny dot to the lower right of the large star. Sirius is the large one. Lindenblad's accomplishment in getting a successful photograph is amazing. He has studied the Sirius system for 7 years and found no evidence of the third star, Sirius C. But the Dogons say it's there, and some astronomers say they've seen it. Now we see that the Sirius system is rather interesting and complicated. Only in this century have we advanced towards knowing about degenerate matter and understanding white dwarfs through our researches into nuclear physics. So we would be surprised, would we not, if someone without our modern science had known as much about the Sirius system as we do. Those doggone people do. Crazy. Now, the peoples of sub-Saharan Africa are the source of our first arresting information. He starts out deciding to solve this problem. The particular people are called the Dogon. They live in the present state of Mali. The nearest cities to them are Timbuktu, Bamako, Ouagadougou, and Upper Volta. Initial research for me on the Dogon turned up an article in an anthropological journal by the French anthropologist already mentioned. The article was written in French. An English translation of it is published for the first time in this book. When I first read the article, which is entitled A Sudanese Sirius System, I could hardly believe what I saw, for here was an anthropological report of four tribes, the Dogon and three related ones, who held as their most secret religious tradition a body of knowledge concerning the system of the star Sirius, including specific information about that star system, which it should be impossible for any primitive tribe to know. The Dogon consider that the most important star in the sky is Sirius B, which cannot be seen. They admit that it's invisible. How did they discover it in the first place? How then do they know it exists? The two anthropologists say, quote, "The problem of knowing how, with no instruments at their disposal, men could know the movements and certain characteristics of virtually invisible stars has not been settled or even posed." Virtually invisible. It is invisible. Now, the anthropologists make it clear in their article that the large and bright star of Sirius is not as important to the Dogon as the tiny Sirius B, the invisible one, which the Dogon called Potolo. Tolo meaning star. Po is a cereal grain commonly called Fonio in West Africa, whose official botanical name is Digitarius exilis. In speaking of the Po star, the anthropologists call it the star Digitaria or simply Digitaria. Now, what is significant about the Po grain is that it's the smallest grain known to the Dogon, extremely minute, and unknown as food in Europe or America. To the Dogon, this tiny grain represents the tiny star, and that's why the star is called Po, after the grain. It's so small. Now, in this article by the French anthropologist, we read, quote, "Sirius, however, is not the basis of the system. It is one of the foci of the orbit of a tiny star called Digitaria, Potolo, which hogs the attention of the male initiates in their religious system." Now, the casual reader may not notice how unusual it is for an African tribe to put it quite this way, but the orbit of Digitaria, which the Dogon elsewhere describe as egg-shaped or elliptical, is specifically described by them as having the main star Sirius as one of the foci of its orbits. Now, of course, the technical term focus has been supplied by the anthropologists, but they were faithfully rendering the meaning of what the Dogon said in their own language. And what the Dogon were saying, which they also make quite clear graphically in their drawings, is that the orbit of Sirius B around Sirius A is of a kind which obeys one of Kepler's laws of planetary motion, extended to other orbiting bodies. It was Johannes Kepler, 1571 to 1630, who first proposed that heavenly bodies do not move in perfect circular paths. He hit upon the brilliant insight that the planets and their motions around the sun were moving in elliptically shaped orbits, with the sun at one of the two foci of each ellipse. Most people I speak to have no idea that the planets don't go in circles around the sun. Even if they were taught the truth at school, they've long since forgotten about it. And many people honestly don't know what an ellipse is unless you show them one. Here it is. An ellipse is a kind of stretched circle. You can conceive of grabbing the center of a circle and ripping the center into two pieces and then pulling those two portions away from each other. This would naturally make the circle flatten at the top and bottom and bulge at the two sides, and the two pieces of the center would fall along a straight line joining the two most distant points. These two fragments of center each then have the name focus, and the two together are the foci of the ellipse. Foci 1 is pictured here, foci 2 is pictured there. If you get your hands on that ellipse and push at the bulging ends, you might force it back together again and make it a proper circle. Now, what I ask all the readers to take note of is this. How did the Dogon tribe, who had no access to the theories of Kepler or his successors, know about matters like this? How did they even get the idea in the first place that elliptical orbits existed rather than circular, much less apply this idea to some invisible star way out in space? And also to get it right by saying that Sirius A was at one of the foci rather than just somewhere in the ellipse, and not at the center. How did they know Sirius was at a foci and not in the middle of the orbit? Wouldn't the natural primitive idea seem to be, even if you wanted to say the orbit was elliptical, still to have Sirius itself at the center? But no, they knew too much to make a mistake like that. For the whole point about Kepler's law is that not only are the orbits ellipses, but the sun must always be at one of the foci, otherwise nothing will work. Now, in order to know about all this, you need not have had Kepler. elliptical orbits are a universal truth, as true here as they are on the other side of the galaxy or even in some other galaxy. Kepler merely discovered a natural principle. He didn't invent it. So there was no need for Dogen to know about Kepler personally. All that is required is an explanation of how they could have learned the universal principle from any other source. Considering they exist on this planet, and we didn't know of anyone else on this planet living in Africa who discovered these things. They knew it before Kepler knew it, and yet Kepler got the credit. This fascinates me. The Dogen also knew the actual orbit of this invisible star, which is 50 years. You bored? You sleepy? Yeah. Referring to the sacred Sigui ceremony of the tribe, Dieterlen and Grial tell us the period of the orbit is counted double, that is, 100 years, because the Siguis are convened in pairs of twins so as to insist on the principle of twinness. The Dogen also say that Sirius B rotates on its axes, demonstrating that they know a star can do such a thing. The Dogen describes Sirius B as infinitely tiny. And as already said, Sirius B, we now know, is a white dwarf and the tiniest form of visible star in the universe. But what is really the most amazing of all the Dogen statements is this, quote, "The star which is considered to be the smallest thing in the sky is also the heaviest." They couldn't see it, yet they knew it was there. They told you its orbit was 50 years, and it was elliptical, and Sirius was one of the foci. They couldn't see it. They knew it was small, and yet they knew it was one of the heaviest. Digitaria, they said, is the smallest thing there. It is the heaviest star. It consists of a metal called sagala, which is a little brighter than iron and so heavy, the Dogen said this, that all earthly beings combined cannot lift it. In effect, the Dogen said, that star weighs the equivalent of all the seeds or of all the iron on the earth. How'd they know that? So the Dogen obviously knew and presented a theory of Sirius B which fits all presently known scientific facts, and even some which are not known, they present that as well. They know that the star is invisible, but they know it's there nevertheless. They know that the star's orbital period is 50 years, which it really is. They know that Sirius A is not at the center of its orbit, which it is not. They know that Sirius A is at one of the foci of Sirius B's elliptical orbit, which it is. They know that Sirius B is the smallest kind of star, which it is. They know that Sirius B is composed of a special kind of material, from a root meaning strong, and that this material doesn't exist on the earth. They know that this material is heavier than all the iron on the earth, all of which is perfectly true. All this forms the most sacred and most secret tradition known to the Dogen, the basis of their religion and of their lives. Connected with all this are statements they make about the existence of a third star in the Sirius system, which they call the Imayah star, which in comparing it to Digitaria, they say is four times as light in weight, travels along a greater trajectory in the same direction, and in the same time, 50 years. Now, we haven't discovered that one yet, but they're telling us all about it. Their respective positions are such that the angle of their radii is at right angles. This last star has a satellite, indicating that the Dogen appreciate that bodies other than stars are satellites of stars. Of Imayah itself, they say it is the son of woman, a little son. In fact, it is accompanied by a satellite which is called the Star of Woman, or Goethe, as the guide of Imayah. Around the astronomical facts of this extraordinary system, the Dogen have a complicated system of mythology. They have a calendar built on Sirius. I want to take you to something. Now, they claim that their knowledge came from Nomo, which is a collective name for the great culture hero and founder of civilization who came from the Sirius system to set up society here on Earth. The landing of Nomo on our earth is called the Day of the Fish. Our solar system, they teach, is called the placenta of Olga the fox, who is impure. And our own planet Earth, they teach, is significantly the place where Ogo's umbilical cord was attached to his placenta and recalls his first descent. In other words, the Earth is where Ogo plugged in, as it were, to this system of planets. Now, what Ogo the fox seems to represent is evil. And it comes as a shock to realize that Ogo, the outcast, was cast out. And he corrupted this earth. And Nomo came in order to atone for our impurity. It is said over and over by the Dogon that the Nomo dies and is resurrected, acting as a sacrifice for us to purify and cleanse the earth. The parallels with Christ are extraordinary, even extending to Nomo being crucified on a tree and forming a Eucharistic meal for humanity and then being resurrected. And we are told that Nomo will come again. A certain star in the sky will appear once more, they say, and will be the testament to the Nomo's resurrection. Hey, this is down the jungle. Where did the Dogon get their knowledge of this invisible star? You interested in this? I mean, this beats eels, an ace in the deck. So I'm going to get to the ace. Wouldn't it be awful to be a Christian, go into a monastery and smile and look happy and do nothing and say God loves me and never learn anything else the rest of your life? I mean, heaven's going to be so dull if the product of most Christianity is always going to get there. I'd rather go to hell and try to get out. It's more exciting. It fascinates me. How do they know that? An invisible star! You suppose somebody told them? Huh? Now you remember about Sirius? The Greeks changed him into a dog, you know. But he is part of that constellation. The Gemini, the twins, that convey the message of the righteous judge and the redeemer who accomplished the purpose, whose foot crushes not the hare, but that evil serpent which is Satan, and the message of the two-natured, two-double role of the glorious one is taught in Canis Major and Canis Minor, both of them. The small dog, which is a distortion, is him coming in his role as the one who accomplished the redeeming work. The big dog, Sirius, means prince or leader. What if heaven is somewhere around this territory? One of them. Paul got up to the third heaven, you know. To me, some people think heaven is some gaseous sphere out there where Christians float around. I hope that's what they get. I mean, that would make heaven for me, to have these bland Christians full of hot air floating around in ethereal heaven, playing their hearts to each other and saying, how beautiful you are. You think God's going to put us through the kind of training he's put us through to float around on a cloud? Do you realize I got eternity to explore this whole thing? Sirius the prince, and there's some hidden star that was the beginning of creation. That's what the Dogen say. Who, these doggone people got me doggone upset. You understand this? You want to know where the doggone people got this message? You're not going to find out tonight. I'm going home. Now, I got to finish the Zodiac. You'll be watching tomorrow night, 8 o'clock. We are live at 8 o'clock. Might even get on to some more of the doggone people, but I'm heading toward the pyramid. I want to tell you something. These doggone people, some of their... What if I just give you a hint? Their ancestors passed by the pyramid. Good night, everybody.